Go get him.
Yeah. It depends on the flavor.
So do you want to start with 317?
Yes, I thought I would go through the human resources departmental budget and then cover workers' comp and liability and then get into health insurance. And then I've got civil service and handbook changes. And so I've got a laundry list of things to cover.
All right, what about the wage increase?
That will be covered after health insurance. I'll cover personnel changes, the summary that we usually cover. And then
so we're starting with 317.
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
So I'll just point out on 319, on the Human Resources Departmental budget, we have 7 full-time employees in our department. Half of the HR specialist position is charged to health insurance, and half of an HR business partner is charged to workers' compensation because of the amount of time that they're dedicated in those areas. 2019 marked our transition to the business partner model. If you'll recall, our business partners and our assistant HR director are assigned to each of the facilities and dedicate the majority of their time there. This has been extremely successful for us. Those business partners are able to really get in and understand the culture and the issues and be proactive. Our personnel costs are charged out to departments and countywide. Changes to note, temp salaries are increasing by $15,000. That was the result of moving that temporary expense from the treasurer's budget into the general temporary budget in HR. Other professional services budget is going up $35,000. We're putting more resources toward our recruitment efforts, which are becoming more and more challenging. That's a general overview of the HR departmental budget.
How are you how are you changing your advertising?
We're going to be working with more online resources and dedicating specific resources to certain problematic areas, particularly Brookside health care, nursing home industry. We have a lot of turnover in that area. Our assistant HR director is dedicated to that facility, spends a great deal of time on recruitment, and we just need to put some more resources to that. So whether it be utilizing outside services or focusing on attracting the audience that we need.
Do you want to vote on these individually or as a group?
Individually.
Okay. All right, so this concludes this section discussion. All right, is there a motion to
approve motion
as presented? Second, John's motion. Who seconded it anyway?
Second.
All right. A discussion here?
Terry,
yes.
The question. How do you say, locating your various HR professionals in the departments that they support, because you briefly touched on it's been very successful. Mm-hmm. Maybe just give a couple bullet points of where you've seen improvements, either in service, reductions, or costs. I've just got a curiosity.
Sure. So the business partners actually have an office in the facility. So, for example, at the job center, at the county center, Brookside. So they spend part of their week actually on site, office hours there. They're much more face forward to the employees. So we've been able to be very proactive. Employees we see are much more likely to approach a business partner, or an HR person, when they're there in front of you. And they see you and they know you. So we're getting a lot better communication. Our business partners are able to really understand the individual policies in those departments, their cultures, work closely with management, understand their issues in terms of recruitment challenges, because recruiting for CNAs is much different than patrol workers. So they're able to get better understanding and feel for those needs and address those needs. Everything really, from discipline to strategizing with management, leadership.
Do you see your staff doing more strategic planning and thinking versus reaction?
Yes.
Know, tactical reaction?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other discussion here?
A question, Terry.
Yes.
Taking a look at page 322, Clara, and we're looking at the items that include employment testing exam, employment recruitment, tuition reimbursement. And if you look at the year-to-date, 2019, there's really, I would say, an underutilization of those particular items. Just from a perspective that you have, just take tuition reimbursement, for example. $54,000 is the budget. $18,000 has been utilized at this time. Do you anticipate that that really fulfills and will go towards $54,000? Do you think it's really underutilized? Can you comment?
It's very well utilized, tuition reimbursement. So this is through June 30th, I believe, year to date. We see heavy in the spring for college semester, and then heavy in the summer, the fall. We have some summer classes, of course. There are folks that are in year-round programs, that kind of thing. Actually, I just had an update from Chris Fox, and we're projecting that we'll get right up about that amount.
Oh, right. Right. And so the line item above that, which is employment recruitment, you know, only several thousand dollars to this time. You have $20,000 is budgeted. I mean, we're looking at the same thing there. Or what's your impression?
We're going to probably be under that this year. I'm in the process of working on out some different contracts and things. For example, we had an arrangement 2 years ago with Glassdoor, and I'm in the process of determining how we're going to continue, if we are going to continue to use them. We'll probably be a little bit under that, but we also do have some utilization that will take place and show up again.
Question through the chair to you, Barna. In a situation like this where it's not fully utilized, does the balance of those funds, what happens? They lapse back in the general fund? How does it work?
They do. Because the budget is passed by appropriation unit, so first that money would be available for other accounts within that appropriation unit in case one of those went over.
So you can transfer.
Correct.
And that is something that we would see as a county board would have to approve the transfer between.
Not within the appropriation
unit. It was in the same appropriation unit.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes my question.
Anything further? Yeah,
Claire, correct me if I'm wrong. I think we added one or one and a half headcount, so you would have representation in each department or customer facing. Have you been able to quantify, you know, because I know one of the rationale was, okay, our performance, but there's got to be a return on that investment. It's about, maybe not a full year, but it's close to it. Have you been able to quantify some results for us?
So, a lot of what we do in HR, unfortunately, is difficult to put hard numbers to, particularly when we are trying to be as proactive as we can in terms of limiting liability, making sure that, for example, our disciplines are appropriate and done correctly so that we're not spending extra dollars working through those that are appealed or, you know, going another direction.
Well, maybe even a measure is either attrition rate or replenishment rate. Maybe that's something you can keep in mind and update the board perhaps in 3 to 6 months. Okay, thank you.
Sure. Any other discussion here? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the presentation say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes. Go ahead.
All right, so on page 360, the insurance's budget, I'll just point out, as I believe Corporation Council did yesterday evening, you will note that there's the half-time business partner and the half-time human resources specialist in terms of staff there, and then there's some time for Corporation Council support of that as well. So I would like to address workers' compensation first. Starting on page 361, 362, this is holding fairly steady. We are budgeting some increase for claims and lost wages as costs usually rise. On the positive side, we're projecting better returns with interest income. There's a difference from the 2019 budget, just shy of $100,000.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to suggest the workman's comp is within itself, or are we going to do all the insurance? Why don't we do these individually? I see health insurance here. I think it makes more sense. But
do so right now we're done with workman's comp?
I think unless there's something further on that. No.
All right. I'll make a motion to approve workman's comp.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? Anyone? Workers comp? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes. Next.
All right, I thought we'd handle liability next, and then we'll spend what I believe would probably be the bulk of the time on health insurance. So we can just take care of that one. Page 370. This is ticked up a little bit, about $40,000. Although the RMIC revenue is down, we have seen it tick up recently, so we're optimistic with that. But this is a fairly steady one as well.
All right, discussion. So this would cover things like auto accidents?
From the liability standpoint.
That's why the claims paid is on. Jail claims?
Yes, jail claims.
What else?
Joe could see all the different various slip and falls. And
accidents, slip and falls, like we said, jail claims,
highway,
mailboxes.
Mailboxes, windshields, that sort of thing.
All right, so discussion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Anything further? Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, next, you want to do a health insurance?
Yes. So, as I reported to the committee, we went out for RFP for benefits consultant, and Hayes Companies was chosen. We began contracting with them on July 1st of this year. Not only did they come at a reduced overall cost, but through a special contractual arrangement with our new pharmacy benefit manager, Serview, we're saving about $60,000 just by signing the contract with them. So it was a positive. With limited time to work on our 2020 renewal, Hayes stepped right up to the plate and helped us put together what I believe to be a strong proposal that includes some plan design changes, as we do most years, to help mitigate the rising cost of health care. And they helped us find new partners for our dental and vision coverage. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Hayes Companies. As they come up and introduce themselves and get started, I'll hand out a copy of the presentation that they'll be presenting.
All right, do you want to introduce the people?
Pardon me, folks.
Claire,
yes.
Would you introduce them?
Yep. So we have Chris Smested and Tracy Reese, and perhaps you can give a little introduction to your background.
Absolutely. I'll start. Chris Messert with Hayes Companies, lead benefits consultant. Thanks for having us. Looking forward to it. I've been a lead consultant with Hayes Companies. I'm in my sixth year. Prior to that, I practiced law for about 6 years at a large Milwaukee-based law firm. And leading up to that, I have about 9 years of experience in the financial services industry. So, again, thanks for having us.
I'm Tracy Reese. I'm a benefits consultant with Hayes Companies. I've been there 9.5 years now. Prior to that, I was a strategic account executive working with self-funded employers at a large insurer in the area. So, thank you for having us.
I'll just wait 1 minute. We're going to dive into the presentation that's showing on the screen now. So as soon as she hands those out, we'll be good to go.
Projection of the self-funded medical plan. So that includes, when you're a self-funded employer, the claims costs that you're paying out, but then also the administrative fees that you're paying to Humana to pay your claims, and also the reinsurance they provide to protect you from high catastrophic dollar claims. So just a little history here. In 2018, those combined costs were about $23 million. If we annualize where you're at year-to-date 2019, you're on track to spend about $23 million again. Obviously, that may change depending on how October, November, and December go. But at this point, if we just annualize what happened so far, you're on track for that. When we project forward for 2020, we're looking at about $23.9 million. And then when we make some proposed plan design changes that we'll be talking about, that brings that overall projection down to 23.5. So slide five goes into the proposed medical plan design. And so this is a transition to a more traditional PPO plan versus the copay plan that you have in place today. And the primary goal of that is to mitigate some costs, certainly make some plan design changes, but also more importantly is to kind of steer employees more towards consumerism. Right now in today's copay plan, there's different copays assigned to services, and once those copays are paid, the plan pays at 100%. So if I'm an employee, for example, and I am getting a imaging test, that could be a very low cost x-ray on my knee, and I pay $100, or it could be a very expensive $5,000 MRI, I'm still paying $100. So in the current plan, I'm very insulated from what the real cost of healthcare is. In the new proposed plan, there's cost sharing at every step of the way that has employees sharing in that cost. So they get a feel for how much does something cost? Do I need to shop around? Can I go to Smart Choice instead of the facility up the road and save some money for themselves, but also for the plan? So just high level, a comparison on the page here is the current copay plan and then the 2020 proposed plan and some of the differences. So currently preventive care is covered at 100% and it will continue to be covered at 100%. Right now there's a deductible that applies to prescriptions and it only applies to preferred brands and non-preferred brands and specialties. So generics does not apply to the deductible today. In the new proposed 2020 plan, it's a deductible that would apply to the medical expenses, not the prescription drugs. This is a more traditional PPO arrangement where there's some cost sharing for certain things like inpatient hospital stays, high cost imaging, etc. Right now the coinsurance, as I mentioned, is 100%. Once an individual pays that copay, today the plan pays 100%. In the new PPO plan, once that deductible is met, there's a cost share where the employee's paying 10% if they're staying in network and the plan is paying 90%. So again, getting a flavor of what that overall cost is and sharing in that overall cost. So on the left-hand side, it shows the copays that are in place today. So there's copays for ER, urgent care, primary care visits, specialist visits, all which are very common in PPO plan designs and which will stay in the new proposed plan as well. What's not as common is the copays for diagnostic testing, imaging, outpatient services, inpatient services, surgical, emergency medical transport, and telemedicine is also one that would be staying. So once the plan is paying at that shared cost 90-10, up to an out-of-pocket maximum. So right now the out-of-pocket maximum is $7,900 for singles and $15,800 for families, which is a pretty high out-of-pocket maximum, but the chances of individuals hitting this out-of-pocket maximum in the current copay arrangement is very slim. I would say the vast majority of individuals in any plan design don't get to that point of an out-of-pocket maximum, but even more so in the current copay plan design. In the proposed, we're proposing a little bit less of an out-of-pocket expense, $6,000 for individuals and $12,000 for families. And the RX copays would remain the same as they are today, with the exception of specialty medications. Specialty medications are very, very high cost drugs, can cost thousands of dollars each month. Right now, those are costing individuals a $60 copay. Under the new proposed specialty medications, the employee would pay 10% of the cost of that drug. However, it would be capped at $200 a month. So if they're getting a drug that's $5,000 a month, their maximum exposure would be $200.
Mr.
Chair?
Yeah.
Let me ask a question. Sure. Do we cover anything for out-of-network services?
Yes. This is just the in-network plan design here.
Okay. Is the out-of-network further down?
We did not include the out-of-network. We can follow up with that.
Okay, that would be great. And sure. Then for the PPO, who's in that network group?
So the Humana will continue to be the administrator. So it's the same network as is in place today.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
I'd like to piggyback on that.
All right, go ahead.
Supervisor Decker, I think you can recircle back, and I'm sure you can tell this committee what the out of pocket is for, not in network. You can tell the committee that, correct? You don't need to follow up. You can tell us tonight.
I
think
they have that.
I'm
sorry, I don't have it. We don't have it with us.
So you don't have out-of-network benefits, what the cost would be to our employees?
I don't have the numbers tonight.
I believe Mark, Supervisor Nordegan.
Yes. Question about the deductible. Currently said there's a deductible only for RX. The proposed plan, you said, doesn't include any prescriptions, any records. Is that right?
That's correct. So
there's no out-of-pocket, there's only an out-of-pocket maximum. There's no deductible you need for your prescription.
Correct. It's just the copays up to that out-of-pocket maximum.
So it's gonna be your medical out-of-pocket plus your RX out-of-pocket that's gonna hit that $6,000 per individual. Or $12,000 for the family, actually $6,000 for the individual and $12,000 for the family. Because once that individual had $6,000, they're paid for it.
Correct.
It's the rest of the family shares the other $6,000.
Correct.
Okay. Then when you're talking about the specialty drugs, the ones that cost $1,000, when does that kick in? What dollar amount does it say you're going to pay 10%? Is it $500 for the drug a month? Is it $1,000 a drug a month? Is it $5,000 for the drug? What's that dollar?
Whatever the cost of the specific drug is, you're paying 10% up to a $200 maximum.
Okay, so what's that cost? So for instance, if you're on Breo and it's $350 a month, is that cost? Or if you're on some special medication that's $3,500 a month, that's that cost?
Correct.
It's not, so I understand the question.
Dollar
it's not a dollar threshold. They're generally higher cost drugs, but it's how it's categorized. If it's categorized as a specialty medication, that plan benefit kicks in. Right, so that's, there's not a dollar threshold, it's dependent on the drug.
Okay.
So we can't say at a $250 right. threshold, okay. You'll pay 10% coinsurance.
And then you had 100% cover for preventive care. So a colonoscopy would be preventive care.
Okay.
What if they find a polyp during a colonoscopy? Then it's that diagnostics, and now it goes to the copay?
It depends how the provider bills it, but yes, if they're billing it as a diagnostic, it goes to deductible.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thank you.
No, I'm good. Thank
okay.
You.
Anyone else? Questions here?
Okay.
All right.
Next slide.
What can you define this one? You brought up that preventive care. Define that.
Sure. So it's your annual office visit to your primary care physician. They're billing it as a routine checkup where you're not going for any symptoms. You're not going for a medication check because you have high blood pressure. You're just going in. They're doing your routine type of, you know, they're checking your glucose, they're checking your blood pressure, they're checking your cholesterol, because nothing's been diagnosed, but we're trying to catch it, you know, if something...
Physical exam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, a physical. Mammograms, pap smears, PSA tests.
So
there's a whole
visit.
Government list of preventive care items.
A wellness visit.
Exactly, yep.
You have a list of that.
It's yes, government defined.
It's a government defined list.
Yeah, yeah. Correct. Anyone else?
Yeah, I got a question.
No.
This generic brand, is that a 30-day supply or what?
Yes, 30-day supply is represented on here.
So if you got a 90-day supply, it's going to go like three times that, right? I mean, that's how they prescribe it.
Right, right.
The other question I have is that, you know, we're giving our employees a 2% increase. Mm-hmm. How much are we taking away in increased benefits for health insurance? I don't know who's got that answer, but that's on my mind right off the bat, okay?
Okay.
I think that what we're doing is giving it in one hand and taking it away in the other.
Well, so
I know that's complicated, okay? It's not a simple answer. It does appear that you're increasing their health insurance and giving them a raise and then taking it back in the increased health insurance.
I thought the materials had the answer to that.
They do, so...
All right, what page?
The whole thing has
a... There is a premium change here, right?
There is a premium change. Right. And I'm just wondering if we could work through, we can show you the out-of-pocket impact in terms of utilization, and then we can get to premiums.
Well, I think it's an important question. I don't want to lose the answer. There is an answer if you could think.
I mean, you know, we're given across the board rates of 2% to everybody at their top,
maybe,
whatever their range is.
3%.
So if I'm in the middle someplace making $20 an hour and somebody's making $40 an hour at the top, we all get the same increase in health insurance. So the guy in the middle gets less because he's making less, so he's going to pay more in health insurance costs. That's all. Simple.
Go ahead. Honey, can you pull up?
And if it's complicated, so please somebody tell me. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
then onto your desktop. Had the same thing on the
gateway. Everything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We gave them an increase in their health insurance, and then we gave them an increase.
It makes sense.
This one? Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's awful hard to look at this and get actually what it is.
Right. And Clara will show you some numbers about premiums, and then there's some examples of utilization that are in the presentation. But I also wanted to point something out. I know I've heard before this comment about the wage increase and the health insurance and offset. But I wanted to point out to the committee and to any other members of the board that are here, we have made plan design changes to the health insurance every year that I've been here. Sometimes to the tune of $1 million, sometimes to the tune of $500,000 or $750,000. Every year, we contain the cost of health insurance to keep the budget in line. Sometimes that's at the expense of the employee. This year in 2019 was when we went to the Serview Pharmacy, and to me that was a win-win. Because although there might be some inconveniences for employees, there wasn't additional cost for employees, okay, and yet there was a savings for the county. So that was wonderful. But that's not the way it usually works. So these plan design changes are a little different than they've been in the past, but they're plan design changes, just like we've done in the past. The potential wage increase, that came from a whole different scenario, and Clara will speak to that as well. But I would like you to kind of separate the two, because it wasn't one and supposed to offset the other. We've made plan design changes with no wage changes in the past.
And tell that to the employees.
I understand that.
So the impact in terms of premium, the health insurance is increasing. Despite our savings with plan design changes, we're going to see increases. Healthcare costs continuing to increase, claims will increase. That's why we're focusing on healthcare consumerism, because ultimately that should help all of us, the county and employees, in terms of limiting the cost increases. But employees who are actively engaged in wellness, so if they're in a silver, gold, or platinum tier, and they're enrolled in health, dental, and vision, the net impact on their cost for the premiums will be very minor, and in some cases a savings. So So if you look up on the screen, you'll see the health premiums. These are annual employee contributions. So you've got the first column with 2019 based on the tier level. And then you've got the 2020 premiums, again, based on tier level. And you've got single on top, family on the bottom. You'll see the difference. These are annual, again, annual, not per pay period. And then there's a column called traditional dental vision savings. So again, we're looking to move away from Humana for dental and vision and move toward Delta Dental and Delta Vision. And by doing that, for someone enrolled in traditional dental and the vision plan, they'll see $118 in savings for the year for single, and $322 in savings in family premium for the year. So when you offset those health insurance premiums with those savings, again, those in the silver, gold, and platinum are going to have a very small difference, and in some cases, in the family situation, we'll see an actual reduction in overall premium. So
if I get this right, from what I've heard, that you're increasing each one of those 1%. Is that right? As far as
for the blue,
gold, 1% increase in their costs.
For the actual tiers, yeah. Yes. And again, we're on our way to that in the presentation.
All right, watch, proceed.
All right, so slide 6 speaks to those difference in tier percentages. So on the left-hand side is 2019 and what costs the employees pay based on the wellness level that they achieve. So right now, someone in blue is paying 18% of the overall premium. Someone in bronze is paying 15%. Someone in silver is paying 9, gold 6, and platinum 4. In 2020, we're proposing that the blue and bronze be combined and individuals pay 19%. There's very little that one needs to do to achieve blue or bronze status. So we're combining those and asking employees to pay a little bit more. But once they get to silver, gold, and platinum, paying 10%, 7%, and 5%. One other piece, Humana now allows an option to redeem the bucks and the things that are earned online can be limited to fitness equipment and tracking tools versus right now an overall retail kind of shopping gift card mall. So we're proposing to limit it to those fitness related items. Okay. So slides 7 and 8 speak to, we wanted to give some illustrative examples on how this impacts employees from a plan design change perspective. Again, I can't stress enough, these are illustrative, the costs are illustrated based on, you know, some obvious industry knowledge, but it really depends what kind of utilizer you are, how these changes are going to affect you. So we tried to demonstrate a low utilizer, a moderate utilizer, and a high utilizer of healthcare. So you'll see at the top a low utilizer of healthcare, maybe somebody who just has their wellness visit. Maybe they get sick once a year, they go to a specialist, they have a generic prescription. They'll pay very much a similar out-of-pocket cost in the current copay plan as the proposed PPO plan. So in the current copay plan, out-of-pocket $214, in the proposed $224. A moderate utilizer, again, now we're throwing in a few more things, imaging, x-ray, some lab work, some prescriptions. In the current copay plan, in this scenario, a member would pay $1,777. In the proposed 2020 PPO plan, they pay $2,052. On the back end, the high utilizer, this individual is having an inpatient stay. We're adding, you know, quite a few more things. This individual has a specialty prescription, so we're trying to demonstrate how that would flow through the plan. And currently, a high utilizer in the current copay plan would pay $3,695. And under the 2020 proposed plan, this member would hit their out-of-pocket maximum at $6,000. So you'll see that there's several costs that are the member's not paying anything because they've hit that out-of-pocket maximum. What isn't shown on here is if this high utilizer were to continue to have services beyond this, they would still be paying all of their co-pays. So they could still be tallying whereas this person in the proposed PPO plan has stopped. They've met their out-of-pocket and the plan's paying at 100%.
So can you speak to your thoughts so you can make sure I'm not the only one that has this question. So somebody reaches their out-of-pocket max and now their insurance is covered 100%. Burn it up. I want this, and this. And my concern is that this is going to cost the county a ton of money near the end of the year. What have you guys factored this in? Have you thought about this? Because I'm in the healthcare industry, and if you don't think it doesn't happen, you're sadly mistaken. So can you speak to that? I mean, that's a concern of mine. Or you don't have a comment? Or
maybe you have a different comment, but from
you understand what I'm trying to say? And so once you reach this out-of-pocket maximum, and it's $6,000 individual, $12,000 family, now you want to do this, and this prior to paying your deductible again. And I see it so often that my concern is that the county is going to get nailed.
Well, first of all,
between November and December, so to speak, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But for a service to be covered under the plan, it has to be medically necessary.
Well, I understand that.
So, I mean, someone may be, to your point, getting a procedure done at the end of the year because it's on the county's dime instead of their own the next year. That's certainly going to happen. But the largest, 20% maybe on the high side would hit their out-of-pocket in a year. So we're talking a very small number of people. And then they also have to have those services that are medically necessary and be able to schedule those and get those in. So I hear your concern, and I think, you know, it's definitely a possibility, but I don't know that it's as widespread as you might think.
Right. So basically you're saying you think 20% of the people would do this, 80% would just continue to go through the plan as needed?
I think maybe 20% would hit that out-of-pocket, and then there's probably a smaller portion of those people that would do that.
And I would suggest, too, with your current copay plan, so there's not a pocket max there as well, it's actually harder for the members because of the copay design to achieve the out-of-pocket max, so that encourages them perhaps to continue to utilize the plan even more, because now I can go in for a number of MRIs for $100 a crack, right? And I'm slowly working toward my out-of-pocket maximum. That $100 payment is subtracted from the total cost of the MRI, which goes to the county's plan today. Right. So I would suggest that perhaps your current copay plan design might encourage overutilization on additional cost to the county as opposed to the new plan design. Sure. I will say from my perspective, the proposed plan design does a couple of things that I think are key. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with consumerism, but I'm going to address it just briefly to make sure we all understand that. So consumerism really is encouraging everybody, including myself, to be a better consumer of healthcare. And I myself, my wife's a teacher up in Washington County. I'm on a high deductible health plan. And so high deductible health plans, by nature, you hear about them incenting consumerism, right? Because I have more first dollar out of coverage, that deductible before the plan pays. So now me, as a consumer, I'm going to make better decisions, i.e. rather than going to the emergency room, maybe I use telemedicine, okay? With the proposed plan design, adding a deductible on the front end, right, puts a little more skin in the game, first dollar coverage for your members. So now maybe they think a little bit more about the decision they're gonna make about care, but still the $500 deductible that's proposed is at or much better than market, right? So it's still a very rich benefit, but puts a little skin in the game. And also the copays that remain, that we've allowed to remain, at least the proposed plan design, is important because it eliminates barriers to care, right? Primary care specialists, there's still copays there. We want people to go in to see doctors. It's important for them to see doctors to kind of stave off issues that might come up later. So your plan, the proposed plan design, is encouraging and incenting consumerism, eliminating barriers to care by keeping the copays in place that are there. And it's also for those high utilizers, because some people can't help it, right? It's actually bringing down the out-of-pocket max a little bit. So there's a win for them, right? So I think that the proposed plan design accomplishes a few things, and not the least of which is consumerism. I just want to make sure that we're all on that same page. And again, consumerism is just being a wiser consumer of healthcare, using telemedicine when, you know, ER is maybe not the best option.
Right? That answers my question. Thank you.
Good. You know, people don't know the cost of these various surgeries, hospitalizations, MRIs. That's not advertised. That state legislation was never passed, so how would you be a better consumer if you don't know the price?
So on Humana's website, you can do some of that research, and I think, you know, in today's environment, there's really no motivation for someone to want to seek that information out, but I think in the future, there could be some incentive there for people to, you know, it's on us to educate employees on how to get to that information, certainly.
Well, communication is key. I mean, even aside from we call that healthcare transparency, right? Cost transparency. But even today, we know from carriers and other data that about half of ER visits could have actually been addressed via telemedicine. Okay, so if you look at even the proposed plan design, we're going from a $200 copay to a $10 copay, right? That's an education tool. At the end of the day, consumerism, and that's the long-term focus of the proposed plan design changes, is to drive costs down, which helps not only the county, but its employees, and can minimize those future increases to the extent they're there. So I think short-term, maybe there's a little bit of an increase, but it's with a long-term view on really making positive change.
Bill.
So if I understand this correctly, going from the current copay plan to the 2020 PPO plan, the plan, if you want to say it, insurer, is still Humana, is that correct?
Correct.
That's correct.
Now, when we take a look at going from the current copay plan to the 2020 PPO plan, in terms of available providers, will the county membership see any differential between the current list of providers in Kenosha County and on this new PPO plan? They remain identical.
The
no.
Provider network is the same.
Okay.
Nothing changes there.
All right, thank you.
Mark.
You brought up high deductible plan. Is this considered to be a high deductible plan?
It is not.
It is not. And why is it not? I mean, $3,000, I got it at $2,850. It's considered a high deductible plan. So that kicks in an HSA potential, which can save people pre-tax money on paying for their out-of-pocket stuff.
So there's minimum deductibles that the IRS mandates for having.
What was the question? I couldn't hear
it. $6,000.
Could you speak up, please?
That's the out-of-pocket maximum is $6,000, okay. But the deductible here is $500.
Oh, that's all out.
Yeah.
That's
and the copay is involved as well. You can't do first dollar for that.
Okay, thank you.
So you're figuring that people will be better consumers because when they're sick, they'll look at the computer to find out what it costs at various locations before they run to the ER, they'll get on the television or telemedicine, and you think they'll do that when they're hurting and not feeling well?
Maybe not when they're sick. You know, that maybe when they need to seek care immediately, I mean, that's a different story, but certainly when they have a plan, MRI, a plan knee replacement, things that they can have some time and schedule out in advance. Definitely, I think that's something that people can do.
And that's why we've left copays in for your primary care visit, your ER and urgent care, and the telemedicine. So we don't want to, you know, if people need to go and emergency, they're going. But again, that healthcare consumerism really comes into play when people have the opportunity to do a little checking. So if you're sent for diagnostics, you can see, is it less expensive for me to go across the Highway 50 or have it done right there at the hospital? Most cases, it's much less expensive to go across the street. So likewise in surgery, generally do a little research, obviously not emergency surgery, but those things that are planned, you can do a little research and hopefully make good decisions.
Go ahead.
I have a plan like this, my husband and I, and we are smarter shoppers now. Like, I'll go to Kenosha Radiology versus going to Freighter or imaging because it's cheaper. Because we have a high, you know, we have a high threshold that we have to pay, and we still can do the HSA. We do that money because if we know that, you know, I have back problems, you know, I'll plan for that and put it aside. So I think with this plan, people do plan. They are smarter, more savvy consumers. And you pick and choose when you're going to have things done. Just don't automatically run to the emergency room. Call the number on your card. So I think it's I've experienced it. I think it's good.
And I'll just clarify, this is not a qualified high deductible health plan, so we don't have HSA, but we offer FSA same, for the same okay. purpose. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I understand basically utilization is what is driving this. That's why when we asked you at the beginning, what is the change? It depends on how much you use the health care. Okay, I get that. I basically don't really have a problem with what we've seen so far, but I do want to talk briefly about the out of network. What you're telling me right now is anybody who would be out of network with the plan, the new plan, would be out of network with the old plan.
Right.
So there's no change in out of network.
No.
But you can't tell us if there's, you know, a huge bump in cost of that.
There is. I didn't bring those numbers with me, and I don't want to spout off memory because I don't want to get them incorrect. But yes, out of network generally is much higher because you want to encourage usage in network because you get much deeper discounts when people utilize in network benefits.
Understand that. But I want to know what the change is. So is there a big bump in the price for out of network for this new plan as opposed to out of network for the old plan? Am I not making sense?
Because
I may not make sense.
No, I know you're talking about out of pocket and deductible.
I mean, I don't have a plan like this. So if I'm in the current plan in 2019 and I go out of network, I'm going to have expenses because I go out of network.
Yes.
Okay, got it. So you're saying we're going to have the same thing in the next plan. You go out of network, you're going to have expenses.
You're going to pay more.
I want to know what the comparison is roughly of the two.
We will get you that.
We'll follow up with that.
Yeah.
I need to know that.
He wants the answer.
It's going to be this.
Before I vote on insurance, I want to know the total impact of what's going on. I mean, I want to know that. And I know you don't have the answer now, but I mean, how can I mean, you're leaving a whole thing out there. What if somebody has to go out of network? They want to know what it is, and we go ahead and approve this, and all of a sudden it's you know, $2,000 more than they're paying for out of network now, and money's tight. That's my opinion. No. So,
do you have the answer?
That's not right.
No, they don't have the answer.
Why not?
I did not bring the detail on out of network.
All right. Should we adjourn this till tomorrow night so that we have all of the facts?
I would, but I want to hear the rest of their presentation so that they don't have to do the same presentation.
I have a question. Yeah. What percentage of our medical costs are out of network? Approximately.
Very few. Utilization is less, and I can't, well, it'd be all speculation because I don't know currently unless you do, but typically speaking, in-network utilization is 99%, give or take. So it's a fraction.
So we're talking about 1% of 23 million. So, I mean, you're talking very minimal numbers to the difference. And they're not expecting the numbers, the percentages, to be much different between one and the other.
I still think we need to have the answers to those questions.
We're going to work on attempting to get that for you before we're finished. Yeah. So that'd be helpful.
Okay. Yeah. If our PPO is not changing, why would the percentage of out of network change? Got a network. It's the same PPO. Why would that change?
The utilization, what you're suggesting, utilization is not necessarily going to change what the plan design is, the impact. Ultimately, I think the member impact is what I'm hearing. What's the deductible? What's the out-of-pocket max?
If you stay in network, right? Same provider, roughly, correct? Mana?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If I went out,
that doesn't
same this year as it will be next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going out. Or would it change?
That utilization doesn't change. What's going to change is potentially the impact to the member, and it could be a positive one.
Okay.
But that's it, because of what I'm hearing is that we're presenting here, and commonly we in network is by far the most discussed benefit. And I appreciate the ask for the out of network, but generally speaking, the utilization is incredibly low. And in this case, what I'm looking at, because I'm thinking about deductibles when I'm thinking out of pocket maximums. I think the structure would have to be defined, and I'm not sure we'll get that detail, but the out-of-pocket maximum could likely go down, I mean, based on what I'm seeing, but that has to be determined, because it's actually coming down in the proposed PPO today.
Right.
Also, you guys have, or are you planning, Clara, to provide some educational literature to kind of update employees on, for instance, Teladoc. I've used it. It's great, especially if you get a sore throat. You don't have to run up to the walk-in clinic or the ER to go get some antibiotics. And it's a smart, very efficient use, utilize that. So is that part of the whole strategy here in helping educate our consumers, which are the employees?
Yes, absolutely. So last year we did open enrollment meetings where we actually went in front of employees, invited them to attend in person. Telemedicine is not new this year. We won't be new in 2020. It was new in 2019. And we have employees who utilize it and greatly enjoy it, especially when they have a sick kid in the middle of the night and can hop on the iPad.
Now, when Hayes looked at this, at the proposal that you put together here, what were the baseline constraints that you were given? Like, don't change this, stay within that. What were the boundaries you were told to not go outside of?
We weren't.
Okay, so this was clean sheet paper.
Yes. Yep, it was, you know, here's what we're projecting. Okay, give us some ideas that we can save money. And, you know, obviously we have to take into account not just saving money, but also the recruitment, the retention, and, you know, how do we make some gradual changes, you know, enforce the behaviors that we want, but also balance out still having a very rich benefit for employees.
Do you guys work with other municipalities?
We do.
And in general, when you first started working with them, kind of the same approach, keeping those critical factors you just mentioned in mind?
I mean, I think every client, whether it's a municipality or a private sector, we take a lot of time to find out what their challenges are and their objectives and their goals are. So I can't say
okay,
that we would take the
cutter.
Exact same. It's not cookie cutter, no.
All right. But in general, you're keeping things.
Sure, we need to keep in mind the whole.
Cost.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. And how many of your, is there a contract that the county has with Hayes now?
Yes, we do have a contract.
And is it how many years?
I believe it's 3 years.
And what are the metrics behind maintaining that contract?
As far as?
What are you asked to deliver as far as reduction in cost, improving in features, anything like that? Or is it, it's a 3-year contract, no matter if you guys do nothing?
Well, we
what I mean is, you don't make a change proposal for the next 2 years.
Sure.
Do we still stay with you guys? There's gotta be a reason we're with you. I think this is a nice first step, but I'm talking about next year and the third year.
Certainly. So we have a service agreement where it talks about all the different things that we do for the county. You know, so certainly I think it's probably subjective at the end of that term. You know, if we're not, you know, obviously we can only do so much, right? I mean, your healthcare costs are your healthcare costs. And if you have a sick population or you have some catastrophic claims, there's nothing that we can do to control that. But certainly if you think that there's someone out there that can manage it better, that's your option.
Well, clearly you guys won the contract, so there was a reason, right?
Yeah.
Came in with a proposal. I'm glad to see what you did bring here. I completely advocate for consumerism and healthcare and utilization of your benefits because it can contain costs for everybody overall, both employees and the taxpayers themselves. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else, Gabe?
I have a question. Is there a comparison to see what the cost difference would be if the copay was changed to 80-20 and the out-of-pocket, maximum out-of-pocket, will go 5,000, 10,000? Would be the big difference in that?
I don't have that with me, but we can certainly provide
that. Is that a big deal to do it?
We need to run that. We use actuarial models, and so what we need to do is determine the actuarial values of what you're proposing here, run it through modeling to determine projected cost impacts. So
is it a long process to do it, or it will only take a few minutes, a couple hours, whatever?
I'd say we want hours to ultimately run the numbers and analyze and just discuss it. But
okay, so
yeah, it's not going to take weeks.
So if you were given notice, like 24 hours, 36 hours prior to that, you would be able to do it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
further discussion, Ron?
Just one other point. Let's say I'm the luckiest guy in this world and I don't get sick and I never have to go to the doctor. I'm still going to lose part of that raise that you give me to this increase in premiums, right?
It's going to cost you $10 more a year.
A month.
A month, okay.
I'm sorry, Supervisor, can you repeat that, please?
The question is, I'm the luckiest guy in the world, I never get sick, okay? I'm going to still lose part of that raise you're giving them, giving the penalty employees, because my premiums are going to go up because of the increase of 1% in each step, right?
Well, that depends. If you're silver, gold, or platinum level, and you are enrolled in health, dental, and vision, it's either a couple of dollars or it's a savings.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Back to that chart that I showed before.
I get that part.
Yeah, Ron, what you got to understand is if you engage in this plan and you go through the metrics of being healthy and wellness, and which my understanding, Claire, is not very hard.
You're
thinking now, so you're actually buying up to a better premium. That's what she's talking about.
I understand that, but we're still increasing that
because the health care is going up, Ron.
Whoops, going up. Red's going up.
Okay,
thank you.
All right, any other discussion here? All right, does that complete your presentation?
No.
Started.
All right, go ahead.
All right, so moving on quickly, dental and vision, as Claire mentioned, we have an option on the table that will save employees money. This is a completely employee-funded benefit, the dental and vision, so there's no county dollars at stake here, but we were able to find matching plan designs, a two-year guarantee, lessen the costs, and actually have more dentists in the network on the dental plan. So we feel that that's a win-win for employees and a good message to be able to give to them. Same with the vision.
Okay. She shrinks it down so I can't see it. Yeah, okay. See how you guys.
Turn around.
Savings, that's what it means.
Turn around, Jeff.
All right, moving on to slide 13.
Is this like $5.41 a month?
Yes.
Same with the dental, it's $35.92 a month? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, so slide 13. Provide some benchmarking. So the first benchmark slide includes the current PPO design, and then the second benchmarking slide includes the proposed design. And so what we're doing here with benchmarking is we're comparing the county's plan design to other government entities, other employers of similar size, manufacturers that you're competing for talent with, the state of Wisconsin, as well as our book of business. We're looking at all of the plan design elements, the deductibles, the out-of-pockets, co-insurance, and co-pays. And then we're also looking at what it costs from a percentage perspective and a dollar perspective. So if I were, you know, basically on the left-hand side, green arrows are better than benchmark or lower than the benchmark. Red arrows are higher than benchmark. Equals are self-explanatory. So essentially here, the benefit that you have today in the current copay plan, your deductibles are less than market, your co-insurance is less than market, your copays are all on par. We talked about that maximum out-of-pocket is a little bit higher, but again, very hard to actually get there. But you're paying significantly less than market for this benefit. So at 18, employees are paying significantly less. So a single employee is paying 18%, and that's only if they achieve the blue level. So that's, they're not participating in wellness at all compared to, you know, 25%, 26%, 22%. So it's a very, very good cost perspective for employees.
We're paying 18% and 19%.
Currently it's 18 for a blue.
And under 2020 it's what?
19.
Discussion. Yes,
John. Well, I think it's being a little disingenuous showing that as 19%, because 55% of our employees pay 5%, and then, you know, others pay 7 and 10. So 19 is just way out of there. I mean, we're like paying 20. They're paying 20% of what most employers in Wisconsin are paying at 5% compared to 25%.
Yes.
About the coinsurance. You're doing comparables when the coinsurance, I would assume, for the other comparisons are 80-20, and they have a, we have a zero that you're projecting. So wouldn't the 80-20 bring down the maximum single coverage from 6,000 to a lower out of pocket if we had a 20% coinsurance?
I'm not following the question.
So, if you look at the maximum out-of-pocket single coverage.
Are you on slide 13 for discussion sake?
Yes. So, Kenosha County is at $7,900 for the employee. Mm-hmm. And we're doing comparisons to $3,000, but they have the coinsurance of 20%. So, if we had a coinsurance, wouldn't that bring that down so the out-of-pocket for the employee would be lower?
No.
So how?
It tracks, a copay will track against your out-of-pocket maximum, just like a coinsurance will track versus your out-of-pocket maximum. So they're just different cost shares, that's really all they are.
Okay.
So the out-of-pocket max is apples to apples. And I would suggest on the contribution percentage, the 18 or 19%, you show it worst case scenario, and worst case scenario shows that it's very favorable. And so as you earn down, it gets even more favorable. So just so we have a baseline, we use really the non-wellness or the blue bronze as it's proposed.
Seems to me that the employee out-of-pocket is really high for this program. I mean, $6,000 and $12,000 is a lot of money out-of-pocket.
When you're looking at, so you're looking at benchmark, and I would suggest to you that compared to benchmarks, it may be a little bit higher. It's lower than current state. And I will tell you from a consumerism and from a plan design and cost mitigation long-term perspective, higher out-of-pocket maximums can do a couple of things. They can really help risk manage. All things equal, we talk about this, if there's an employee that works for the county that has a spouse that has coverage somewhere else, perhaps, all things being equal, if the out-of-pocket max is higher here than another plan, they may take another plan. And we look at that as a risk mitigation technique. So maybe a high utilizer takes another plan. And also we see it as well as kind of a cost sharing, that higher utilizers, the higher cost members, pay a little bit more. They're using your plan more and they should pay a little bit more. So
I understand that. I just think that $6,000, $12,000, that's such a high number.
And that's part of what I mentioned earlier, the proposed plan design, doing some things, including giving back, right? And so it's lower by a couple thousand dollars almost than turn out of pocket.
Well, that was still too, as far as I'm concerned, $7,900 is ridiculous out of pocket. Hmm. And so is $6,000, in my view.
Yeah, Dan. Yeah.
Oh,
sorry, go ahead.
So, some people don't understand the difference between deductible and coinsurance. I personally, looking at this plan on page 14, would much prefer our county plan over the Hays Book of Business plan, because the deductible for a single estate is I have to pay $500 before my insurance even kicks in. If I worked somewhere at the Hays Book of Business, any of those, I have to pay $1,260 before my insurance kicks in 1 cent. So right there, I'm $760 ahead. So I would much personally rather pay $500 up front and not have my insurance kick in, and then be able to only have to pay 10% of the rest of my stuff instead of paying that $760 plus 20%. Because the only way I'm getting to that $6,000 is if I have, well, $60,500 worth of stuff. So to hit that $6,000, I'd really have to spend a lot of money. So if I'm just an average user that's only going to the doctor, maybe, you know, got the flu, had to, you know, go to the doctor for something or that, or high blood pressure, had to go for that, I'd much rather pay the $500 than knowing I have to pay $1,260 before it even kicks in. I like this, how it's got the low deductible for our
for our employees first. Thank you.
Terry, can you clarify for the committee, because we've been in meetings together, talk to this committee and the supervisors about about your deductible individual, how if you meet your individual deductible, how it applies to your family and so on and so forth. Nobody's talked about that, and I think that might help Supervisor Belsky a little bit. Can you speak to that? You know exactly what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So we have the individual deductible of $500. So, for example, I have a family of three. Daughter's not yet 26, sorry, yeah. So we're a family of three. If I'm the only person in the year that is really utilizing services, I need to meet that $500 deductible before coinsurance kicks in. Once I, as an individual, hit that $500, then it's coinsurance until, you know, the out-of-pocket maximum. But let's say that, you know, it's not the best year for the whole family and we're all going for this or that or the other thing. As a family, it's $1,000 deductible. So as we're incurring costs, either one individual gets to that $500 or as a family, we hit the $1,000 and then coinsurance starts.
Okay, and then speak to the deductibles, $6,000 versus $12,000?
For the out-of-pocket.
Well, out-of-pocket.
Correct.
Same thing. So again,
right. If I have a user and I meet my 6,000,
as an individual, if you meet your 6,000
within a family,
no, individual.
So as an individual, if I meet my out-of-pocket maximum of 6,000, then the remaining family members just have to get up to the 12,000 combined. So not every, you know, if I had.
So you don't have to 18. Six times three is 18. It's 12. That's what I wanted you to tell me.
And just to clarify, I do understand that. I still think that out-of-pocket is very high for a family that is making $30,000 to $40,000 a year. So that I do understand this because I have this plan.
Mark.
I wish I had this plan. Deductible. No. All out of pocket for $1, which is 80/20 after that, $2,250. The first $2,250 for any one person or $4,500. And then the next $600 out of pocket at 80/20. So I would love to have this.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying there's situations that arise where somebody needs a surgery that maybe can't afford to pay the $6,000 out of pocket. That's all I'm saying. Given whatever their salary is. So I agree. It is a good plan. I just think it's high.
So again, the goal here was to hopefully find some savings, which we did. It's still a very competitive plan. And ultimately, it addresses healthcare consumerism, which over the long term has a beneficial impact on the entire county. Because if we can reduce those claims, it benefits all of us.
Jeff. I have to agree with that. I think that if you look at the makeup of our county board and what we want for our employees, we want the best for our employees, but there's different ways to go about it, and those are not necessarily wrong. And the thing you need to do is come to a compromise at those things. And I'm hearing people saying, you know, at least we're saving money, and we're helping with reducing some costs with utilization. We're reducing costs to the county. There are always plan changes, and I understand to a degree what Ron is saying, and I understand what you're saying. If you're going to give people X amount, then X amount leaves. But really, that's not the case. We've done a zero increase in you know, when I was chair, and yeah, I'm sure our medical plan changed. So, you know, not only did they hit it with the wages, but then they got hit with the insurance as well. So, you know, I mean, I understand insurance is a big compromise, and I get it. So I'm very... I like what you've proposed. Is it perfect to everybody in all situations? It's never going to be. Did you get the number I wanted?
No.
Okay. I then I would. Are you done?
One last slide.
Okay.
Which is just kind of summarizing. The focus on increased healthcare consumerism, the additional steerage toward wellness participation by combining the blue and bronze levels. We've increased the tier percentages as well. And we have that transition to Delta Dental for voluntary dental and vision plans that are lower cost to our employees, same coverage, which mitigates the health insurance premium itself for the most part.
All right, further discussion, Jen?
No, Mike's got it.
Mike?
Did you consider a spousal carve-out at all with this plan? And in general, just kind of, I'm not going to hold you to a specific number, is there a general reduction in cost or reduction in plan cost that you've seen with other plans that you've put in place that have kind of a similar structure?
Yeah. We typically don't see a reduction in cost when you do a spousal carve-out, and the reason is, generally speaking, if you're a healthy spouse, you have an option to go on your employer's plan. But if you're a sick spouse, really sick spouse, you're likely too sick to work. So you don't have another option to go on that plan. So what happens is you're left with the sick spouses, and the healthy spouses you drive off, and you're not collecting premium from those healthy spouses that aren't, you know, because they're no longer contributing the premiums to the plan. So in general, we've done some analysis on that, and we don't see that as being a benefit overall. And additionally, there's a lot of administrative work that goes into verifying that to make sure that people are being truthful each year.
Thanks for clarifying.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, further discussion? Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I will be supporting this, but I want to know what the out-of-network is. I'm not going to vote on it tonight without knowing that. So I would at this point make a motion to start tomorrow's meeting with finishing this off with knowing what that is.
And I'll have that comparison for you.
Okay. All right. I mean, even if it's only 1%, I might be the one person that wants to know. And before I vote on it, I want to know.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Tomorrow. All right. For the discussion on that, Jen?
I'd like to give a little presentation to piggyback onto this one, you know, before we would stop all discussion, if I could.
What would you like to do?
I'd like to give a little presentation of what you were wondering the costs, and Supervisor Frederick were wondering the costs, how that their increases would be impacted by the changes in health care. And I worked some numbers up on that, and I'd like to discuss those.
All right, we could do
I'll withdraw my motion until he's done talking, because I want to give everybody a chance to do what they want to do for this.
Okay, if you could put Excel file there up on the screens for everybody. You could pass those that away. Pass those that away, please. Okay, so Supervisor Rose and Frederick were asking in our last meeting, you know, they wondered what the effect of the change in the health care premiums would be on employee salaries. Yeah, the Excel file there. So.
Not this one. This one?
Sure. Thank you.
This one?
I believe so.
Mr. Poole, this one?
Oh, my God.
Yes, that's the only Excel file there. And if you click on the 2% tab, or add 2 at the bottom there. Okay, so down at the bottom, there's 3 squares here. And the first one is the administration health care, the 1% increase. And the way I figured it out, the most commonly hourly rate that I, on the spreadsheet that I had, was $26.34 an hour. So your 3% annual increase on that would be 79 cents. And if you take that times 2,080 hours, that's $1,643. So if you take the difference that the administration was showing on sheets like this, between last year and this year, it was $275.80 for the family plan. So which equals, if $275.80 divided by 1643 equals 17%. That is what the health care change would cost out of somebody's increase, the average person's increase. Does that answer some of the questions for you?
Say that once again.
The $275.80 increase in your health care, that's the 1% increase for the people on the platinum, go from 4 to 5, etc. That would be divided by the average person for their increase of $1,643. That would cost them 17% of their increase. Okay. I also did other changes, like if we changed it 2% for the health care premiums, and that would they would still keep 30% of their increase, and I did it at 3%, and they would still keep 45%. Now if you flip the page over, and if you'll go to page, or
are you saying those numbers are positive, John? I mean, it's a savings to the employee, is that what you're saying, or?
No, he's saying that 17%
of their
increase will
pay for
their premium. Okay. So the inverse of that is what they would keep.
So 83% is what they keep.
He's saying that they're not losing money or breaking. Yeah, I get right. It now, but I didn't know what I was looking at. So I'm glad.
Okay. That's
yeah. No, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And you're saying 26 bucks.
Yeah, the add five tab there.
Rent.
And if you're looking at the...
You're saying that the $26, you're saying that's the average based on the overall all employees. It's
yes.
$26 an hour is the average.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you flip it over, I calculated it with adding 5% to the health care premiums because, as I said, we're only paying, most of our people are paying 5, 7, or 10%. And that is way below what most people in Wisconsin are paying, especially taxpayers. So, with the 5% increase, that would take up 75%. So they would only be getting 25% of their raise. However, the best scenario would be we give them their 2% wage increase plus their 3% step raises, which are in the budget right now. So they would get an additional 5%. That would give them $1,235 in increases for the average person. And you divide it by the, all right, that's the increase there. And then divided by their average increase. So they would be keeping 55% of that. So the employees get to keep 55% of their 5% increase, and the taxpayers also win under that scenario. And that would also lower our levy percentage down to 2.13, according to my calculations over on the right side of the page. So that's some things to think about.
Right, Terry. So basically, yeah. What you're saying, John, is you want to bump everybody up 5% on the health plan, give them their step increases as proposed by the county executive.
Correct.
And there'll be a cost savings. So what happens if this board decides not to give them all that money? So then that's less, right? The employee gets less, basically?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, thank you.
I'm just trying to think of
a 2.1% levy increase, giving the full increase in wages and then a higher premium.
Correct.
And basically, you're going up 5%. Is that on silver, gold, and platinum, or...
Yeah, that's going up on the 19. It's going up on the lower three, leaving bronze alone.
Okay.
Since I was told last year we couldn't raise the bronze any higher than 18%, but I see we're going 19% this year. So, I mean, if we did raise the bronze, 5% also, that would even give us better numbers. Okay. Probably put us below two.
I was just going to ask a question, if I recall correctly from when Claire presented on the wages,
and the question was asked about insurance, she spoke to premiums to the extent that with this, that she showed, that employees would receive all of that 2% increase because there's an offset to the increase here.
Okay. Right.
However, the question that was then asked was, what is the out-of-pocket impact to the employees for the plan design changes, which Claire couldn't speak to because that was not on the agenda.
Right.
So she's given some scenarios here, but I don't think those are factored into this calculation here.
They are not. I agree with that, but that's about $100 for a single, and was it $300 for a married plan or family plan, I mean?
I'm talking out-of-pocket expenses.
Right, those savings that she was talking about.
No.
I would also point
when
out
you put up the spreadsheet
the
up there, you know, you're showing the.
Is not 5%.
Well, that was
wages.
With vision and dental, and
it's
we're just talking about healthcare.
We got two people talking.
Let him finish. Go ahead. What would you say now?
I said this also is assuming that the increases for their wages is a percentage increase over their current rate, when what's in the budget is a 3% increase of the midpoint of that range and the 2% of the midpoint of the range in which they're in on their anniversary date. So this amount here could be shown could be twice as much as what they're getting, depending on where their anniversary date is. So that's the problem with trying to do averages. That's why we went to the examples of showing the low,
the
middle, and
the
utilization. Because when you do something like this, you're making a lot of assumptions.
Well, do you have a response to that? Well, let me ask you this then. Just using his numbers here, what do you come up with in terms of levy entry?
I have no idea. I would need time to analyze all the assumptions.
I mean, can you bring
the
that
assumptions
back tomorrow?
Sure.
Right, because our calculation on the cost of the 2% was based, as Barnett said, on anniversary date increases, not an across the board on January 1st, so that increase in cost would be higher.
Were you assuming that the 3% step increase would be paid on the anniversary date or on January 1? You didn't factor that in.
I didn't factor that in because I thought anniversary dates would be equally all spread out through the year.
So you're assuming that everybody gets it on January 1?
No, they would just get it throughout the year as their anniversary came.
All right, well,
so it'd be
bring
an average.
That figure in tomorrow as to whether or not it's 2.1 or some other figure, using these assumptions.
I can do it on the increases in the employee contributions.
That's why we got to keep it separate.
Which result in a levy change
which
of what?
Which would, I can calculate what the levy in reduction would be.
Okay.
So I can.
All right, we can talk about that tomorrow. Yeah.
First of all, I think these two things are not comparing apples to apples because of the utilization. I mean, our whole hiring of a consultant and going to a consumer base is really not factored in here with the bronze and platinum and stuff like that. I don't see how that's factored in here. I think utilization and how the things play out is way different, and it's really presumptuous of us to figure out what type of raise there is when we haven't even discussed that. So I mean I really don't know that I want to give a 5% increase.
Well, I know, but that's what he's that's
well,
I
understand that,
yeah.
But we're talking about insurance, and you're talking about figuring out, you're doing it backwards. You're going off what the raises should be based on what the insurance is.
Well, that's because both Ron and myself said if people got an increase in wages, would that all be not by the health insurance premium cost?
I understand
that's
that, but I understand that. But now we're having this discussion without talking about the wages. We haven't even discussed the wages yet. You're just throwing. I understand what you guys asked for, but we're not. We haven't even discussed wages yet. And I also think this is not. When did you come up with this, John?
This week. Last week, excuse me.
Yeah, see, I mean, to me, for us to come and sit here and get handed this, when it's hard,
I mean, for us to even grasp what the hell we were talking about with the first thing, to then compare it to this, I mean, I don't know. I appreciate the work. My thought process is, you know, have this so that this can be vetted and it can be brought up, you know, simultaneously with something like that. I don't know. I mean, I understand what they're talking about with utilization. I understand going, you know, low user, medium user, high user. And I don't know that you can just paint a average picture with, I mean, how many people in our county get $26.50 or whatever he said?
Not many.
Huh?
Not many.
Okay.
That's top paid.
So, I mean, where I don't know. This to me is, I don't get it.
Chair.
John.
Well, it'd be hard to send it out to everybody because then I'm violating quorum rules.
I didn't ask you to send it out. I asked you to work with the administration so we have the same comparison.
Well, he certainly has a right to come forward
with
his own proposal.
I agree.
So we can think about it overnight and discuss it tomorrow. All right, go ahead.
I just want to say thank you, Supervisor Poole. I know this is a lot of hard work, and it may not be apples to apples, but it starts the discussion, are we doing the right thing for the right reasons? So thank you very much for your hard work on this. And it'll be great when the department heads can take a look at it and kind of pull it apart and make the necessary changes or offer alternatives. But thank you.
Very good.
The only comment I wanted to make, I can appreciate what Supervisor Gantz is saying, but also when you say it should be brought in at the same time that the other plan was brought in. The other plan was given to us tonight. So this one is given to us at the same time. There was no way for him to know what the other plan was going to be. Maybe it was going to be the same thing that he had planned on. So we did not know what it was.
Yeah, but he created this before he had this information.
Well, because just in case. But he presented at the same time. Like you said, it should be presented at the same time, which it was, maybe about half an hour later.
Well, I think he should be credited for the effort. So whether he brought it in tonight
or
two
weeks
ago, it doesn't matter.
Harry?
Yes. Dan?
John, I want to thank you as well and commend you for your work on this. But the way I understand it is your $26.34 figure, it's kind of the linchpin to all of your calculations. So my question to HR is, do you accept that as a valid number? Because if that number is wrong, then that drastically skews everything else that, you know, John is calculating.
I cannot confirm that that's the average hourly
sure.
rate.
Because I'm just speculating here, but my guess is that this number maybe was derived from managers and supervisors as well as, when you factor all of those in, maybe it's perhaps skewing this number higher than reality. I don't know. Again, that number to me seems very important. And if it's not an accurate number, then everything else on this page is also inaccurate.
Well, that would equate to an average salary of $54,787 for an hourly person. I think that is pretty sufficient to cover what most of the county employees
would be. The construction of you're taking from the levy increase and decreasing it by your calculations. Mm-hmm. The levy increase didn't annualize the raises. So I think that is a consideration that needs to be taken into effect that we need to look at. And to your point, Supervisor Noodle, at the Finance Committee meeting on the 10th, we did discuss wages and how the wage plan was constructed. And there was a write-up given to the committee, not to the entire board, but to the committee.
I wasn't talking about wages. You know, I'm talking about the insurance. Say the plan that John and Supervisor Poole presented now, why didn't you do it before? You know, at the same time that the other plan was presented.
But
the other plan was presented
tonight. The insurance was
I'm not talking about the merits.
Not the wages.
You know, for or against. I didn't even say one word or the other. It's just the timing that it was presented. I think it was presented at the right time based on all the circumstances. And again, since we're turning till tomorrow night, it would be nice if I can have an answer on my question of what the difference will be between 9:10 and 8:20 and 6:12 and 5:10.
Did you have something?
Yeah, I do. As the chairman of the county board, John, I want to bring this forward. I think this gives supervisors something to look at, something to think about. We're all working in the best interests of our employees as well as our constituents. So this is, as Supervisor Belsky said, just starts a discussion. And I do appreciate the hard work and effort that you put in there. Thank you.
Anything else? Right now, there's no motion on the floor. So.
I'll move to defer until tomorrow night.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion on that?
Well, just one, do you have enough information? Does everybody have what they need? I mean, it's kind of confusing for me, definitely, but does everyone have what they need?
Well, if something more, you certainly can pass along to Barna or Claire and between now and.
What I've heard is confirmation of out-of-pocket max is 80-20, 5,000, 10,000 from an out-of-pocket max for iteration. So,
you can confirm the wage.
Yes.
Would it be possible to get this additional information by maybe 4 p.m. tomorrow so we have time to digest it before we come here at 6?
Sure. Yeah. Can you put on the email? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else before we go? Yeah. All right. All those in?
There's obviously a lot of questions still on the table, so I would encourage the committee to support the motion to table the
motion. Right. Vote. Jeff?
Aye. Yes.
Aye. All right.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. We'll take it up tomorrow night at the beginning of the agenda.
Did our other youth and governance vote? I didn't hear it.
Yeah. She did. Clearly. Wow, it is clear. Clearly.
You're right. You just can't see it. All right. Is there anything else that you want to take up on first now?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A couple of them.
So on this, you're going to talk about the wage increases. Do you want to postpone that as well for tomorrow night? And this is pretty much tied in. I
hope we brought the information in now.
Do you wish to do that or not?
I do.
Well, you know what to do.
What do I do, Terry? I make a motion to defer the wage part till tomorrow.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? All right, seeing none. Jeff?
Aye.
Aye.
John? Aye.
Ed?
Aye.
Your compatriot?
Aye. Clearly aye.
Aye. Aye.
I haven't heard of
see them.
What about the
handbook?
No. Let's do the handbook. All right.
We
should defer to first.
What do we know now?
The big thing.
All right, everybody got a handbook.
Oh, your Bible here. Oh, geez.
Everyone have a handbook there? That
yeah.
If not, we'll get one.
I need one. Oh. If you gave me one till last night, I'll give it back.
All right, go ahead. So this is the standard handbook, and these are, you want to talk about the revision.
We're still on human resources, I guess.
All right. Draw your attention here to the speaker.
Sorry.
All right, go ahead.
So as we do every year, we review the handbook, and we're proposing some changes. I'll walk you through those. The summary of changes is on the top of the document, and then you have the red line version of the document attached. So electronic communications, that policy will we're proposing to be replaced by the new technology use policy. That policy was already approved by the board in June of 2019, so this just formally replaces it in the handbook. Recruitment, this is really just kind of clean up internal applicants serving an evaluation period are not eligible to apply for openings. This has been policy, and it just we're just stating it more clearly because there was some confusion on it. And then we're added the word funded after grant because we no longer consider grant-funded employees their own employee type. They're either a part-time or a full-time employee. They receive the benefits that a part-time or full-time employee receives. The only difference is that their grant goes away, then their position is eliminated because it's no longer funded. Selection, just clean up again. Applicant background investigation, we changed it to human resources will investigate backgrounds of applicants. We do investigate backgrounds. And replaces address and phone number with more general contact information because today it's generally an email. As opposed to just an address and phone number. Resignation and retirement, clearly stating that the effective date is the last day worked. So when someone resigns or retires, the effective date of that resignation or retirement is their last day worked.
Does that last day work include that if they took vacation and then the last, I mean, if they had vacation coming, would they take that and then?
It would be their last day worked on the job. Overtime adds potential for mandatory overtime when minimal staffing needs are met. If you'll see there's a number of circumstances where the county may require overtime, and we're just adding that minimal staffing needs are not met.
So is that what's the difference between that and the way it was?
It's just adding that criteria. So if you have a department that for whatever reason is understaffed, you had to have employees there, you might have to require overtime, make it mandatory.
A jail.
That's the only time that you'd have mandatory overtime?
No, that is added to the list,
oh, okay.
The current list.
That's one more reason for
correct.
Mandatory.
Okay. Correct. Attendance, the language added just simply acknowledges that departments and divisions may establish their own attendance policies, and that really varies, depends on their needs, the business needs of the department. They may have a little bit different call-in policy, that kind of thing.
What does that mean, attendance? You have to be at work every day.
Well, yes, we do want employees to be at work every day.
I don't understand what that means.
So it
establish their own attendance policy.
Right. So in the attendance policy, we establish when you need to notify management if you're not going to be able to be at work. So some departments might require longer lead time on that because of their staffing arrangements. When disciplinary action will result. Those types of things.
So that's what you mean by
right.
That.
PTO, we've added a provision for employees who separate employment will receive the prorated value of that year's PTO grant. If unused, only the prorated value is paid out. So our PTO is granted to employees. So at the start of each year, employees receive a PTO grant based on their years of service, and that schedule is outlined in the handbook. So when someone separates employment with us, it often comes up about PTO, how much PTO, am I eligible for on that partial year of employment. So we prorate it based on full month of service. So if I work until July 1st, I would be eligible for half my PTO grant for that year.
And that expires at the end of the year?
Yes. PTO at the end of the year, unused PTO is forfeited, with the exception of 1 week, may be carried over into the next year. That's existing policy.
So if you retire, you take that, is that a payout?
The prorated amount that is unused would be paid out.
Including the week that you brought from the prior year?
That would be in your grant for that year, that would be prorated.
And so how many days are we talking about when you take PTO?
There's a schedule of PTO in the PTO policy based on years of service.
So give me the range.
5 weeks is the maximum. I'll draw your attention. It's current, page 41. Parks and golf long-term seasonals, we're proposing to give them 2 PTO days per season, starting with their 3rd consecutive season of employment with us. Today as long-term seasonals, they are not eligible for any PTO, so this would be at least 2 days for them to have available. We have many long-term seasonals that return year after year. And that would be a use it or lose it policy. Funeral bereavement leave, we attempted to simplify the language a bit and allow the same 3 days off for all immediate family members with only 1 day off for aunt or uncle, which we currently allow. And then it allows for additional time from PTO or unpaid time off policies to be used if the amount of time provided isn't sufficient. Of course, subject to the terms of those policies. So sometimes 3 days off for a funeral isn't sufficient for employees. So if they have PTO available, they could tap into that for additional paid time off. Of course, scheduling that with their managers. Accident and sickness benefits. The change would give probationary employees only the 2/3 income replacement benefit. Today, to day 30 of that leave, it's 100%. This would be 2/3 income replacement. And for probationary employees who utilize the accident and sickness benefit, it would extend their probationary period by the length of that leave. So new employees are probationary for the first 12 months of employment. It removes the requirement to stay within the immediate vicinity of their home. We had that language in there. It's a bit of a challenge for us to administer, relying instead on the fitness for duty and return to work language, which requires employees not to engage in activities that would lengthen their healing or prevent a return to work. And then it removes the references to temporary disability and replaces that language with injury or illness that renders the employee unable to work. When we get into disability, it falls under ADA, and there are provisions for that. Employee health benefit, we just added some clarity here that benefits end on last day worked. That's been effective all year, but it did not get added to the language in the handbook. So we're attempting to correct that. Leaves of absence eliminates the ability to extend employee health benefit for up to 6 months following expiration of ANS benefits. This was in the handbook as subject to HR director's approval. Really, with COBRA, it should be unnecessary. Once they come off, they would have access to COBRA for that time. And then updates reference under unpaid time off to half or full shift. To accommodate shifts other than 8 hours. Employee assistance program, reference added to handbook. We added that benefit in 2019, which has been a great benefit to our employees. So we just wanted the language in the handbook. Under progressive discipline policy, we clarified up front in the policy how long reprimands remained active. The language had been under each type of reprimand, and we just thought it was clearer to have it up front in the language. It doesn't change it. Adds disciplinary action resulting from violating the harassment prevention policy to types of discipline that remain active for full length of employment. Legal counsel advises that any type of discipline related to a sexual harassment violation needs to remain active because of the liability involved in those cases. Changes reference to any measurable level of alcohol or drugs in the system to violations of the drug or alcohol abuse policy.
How is that different?
So any measurable level of alcohol or drugs is a very, very low threshold, and we want to have it coincide with our drug and alcohol policy, where it would refer to a limit. We're going to be looking to have our drug and alcohol policy revamped, working with a consultant to do that. We hope to do that right away in the first quarter of 2020, and it'll set clear parameters in that policy in terms of levels in the system, and any measurable level of alcohol or drugs can present us with issues if we're trying to defend that.
So this says you can't come to work, any measurable means zero.
Right, with anything
so
above zero, anything.
So the,
right.
What you're saying is by eliminating that, they can come to work with a little bit?
What we would replace it with is any violation of the drug and alcohol
policy.
Yeah,
I know, but what does that mean?
And so generally, to be defensible, they should be a level of impairment. And as I understand it, a 0.04 is when alcohol starts to impair. Any level of drug that we test for, we test at a level where it starts to impair an employee's ability to do their job. So that's what we would be referring to as those defensible parameters that would be set in the drug and alcohol policy.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we can change this without having another policy in place. You know, maybe we should leave it the way it is until we approve a policy, because if we change it to a policy we don't have, how are we going to do it? How can we do that?
We do have a drug and alcohol policy.
Okay, so you have one in place? It's
yes.
Just you're just going to update it.
We're going to update
okay,
it,
okay,
yes.
All right.
So this would allow the drug and alcohol policy to
take effect. Okay.
To rule,
that's fine.
Know.
I didn't make the connection that you just wanted to update it.
Right.
But there is something in place, because
yes.
If you're going to take something out, you got to replace it with something. Okay, gotcha. Right. Thank you.
So if you're right now saying you can't come to work with any alcohol or drugs in your system, and by drugs you mean illegal drugs.
Right.
To a policy which says you can, does that make sense?
Yeah, you might have picked a couple of aspirins because you
no,
have
no, no, that, we're talking about illegal. We're talking about illegal. Right.
So when we test for illegal drugs, it's at a system presence level. So we wouldn't get a positive test result unless it's at a certain level in the system. And that would be a level showing that they did in fact do the drugs, they're in their system, and they are working under a level of impairment.
Discussion on this? No.
So these are like the job site test. You know, it's not where you're sending it to some lab where they can detect all kinds of traces. And
no, they get sent to the lab. But for a test to be positive, it has to be at a certain systems presence level to come back to us as positive.
Because the machinery just is not, they're not trying to test down to the nth degree, they're just trying to test above a certain level.
Right. Those are established by
somewhere too.
Yeah.
Do we know what those levels are? Or is that something you're working on? What it means, well, you had mentioned a consultant. Do they have these thresholds well established?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And we work with ACMED, and they do the testing, and they, if it doesn't meet the level, it doesn't come back to us as a positive.
Okay, and we'll be putting, or will the levels be articulated in the policy eventually?
Yes.
Okay, just don't have those yet.
Well, they're there and they're established. So any laboratory that's doing that testing, there are certain cutoff levels. So systems presence levels of illegal drugs. Alcohol is a little different in terms of establishing a level of impairment.
Yeah.
And generally, the lowest defensible is a 0.04.
Okay.
So that's generally what employers will use in terms of being under the influence on the job.
Quicker than, say, THC, right? Stays in the system a lot longer, or cocaine. So that's what I was just wondering. Are we in a position where we have to state what those levels are? You guys will just know it, and the lab knows it.
Right. We leave that up to the professionals.
Okay. Just remind the employees, hey, don't come to work prepared.
Under the influence, right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, John.
On page 12, where it says weapons, I'm a little concerned, like, you know, if employees carry small pocket knives, I mean, it looks like to me they could be written up, you know, for that.
Well, for example, those aren't allowed in the courthouse. Those get confiscated if you go into the courthouse. But really, it's to address...
Well, it says non-sworn, so, I mean...
Well, I'm any visitor in the courthouse.
Right.
Any form of a weapon or explosive, firearms.
Well, it seems like to me, you know, we're just setting people up for, you know, if they have a small pocket knife in their pocket, you know, an inch and a quarter blade or something like that, that, you know, it's, there should be a provision made for that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I concur.
I don't know what the standard is. Maybe Officer Jeff can tell us, you know.
Well, I think the terminology is vague. Well, it's not so much that, too. It's what is the intent of the item they're carrying. I mean, in my world, you know, if someone has a knife on them and I ask them, what do you use that for, and they say it's self-defense, it's now a weapon. Mm-hmm. If it's to open boxes, it's not a weapon.
Yeah. So everybody tells you the truth, right?
Of course. All the time. So, for whatever that's worth, you know, who's defining what a weapon is?
I mean, it just seems a little extreme there. You
know? Well, I commonly carry a pocket knife. It's small.
Yeah.
It's just handy for open boxes, so you gotta cut some twine or whatever. It's not
open boxes.
Guys, do that.
If that's my idea of a weapon, I'm in big trouble. But here,
why don't we defer to the legal counsel?
I don't have the language in front of me. I apologize. I don't have the handbook. However, I think we have to have some respect for the fact that our supervisors are not going to overreact. They're not looking to set up our employees. They're not going to write up somebody for carrying a pocket knife unless it suddenly becomes, as Supervisor Wemble pointed out, a weapon. If you are in a situation where you are drawing it on a coworker, that's a very different thing than if you have it in your pocket and you come to work and you're not using it for any purpose other than perhaps cutting open a box or something else. I can't imagine any of our supervisors are going to write up one of their employees for using a pocket knife to open up a box as part of their job duties.
Okay, so
do you want to define that in here?
Based on that, do we give the supervisors the discretion based on this wording? Because that's all we're doing is just allowing some discretion. And if this wording isn't what painting them in a corner, I'm good.
I guess I think it's inherent in the understanding of the handbook.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're talking about a weapon, someone who could threaten an employee with said pocket knife, that now becomes a weapon.
I mean,
that's an issue that we need to
many of you probably don't
otherwise,
know.
We probably wouldn't know.
Many of you probably don't know because it's been 20 years, but I started off my career in the DA's office. And as, again, as Supervisor Wendell or Supervisor Rose can tell you, literally by law, pretty much anything can be a weapon. It's not what it is, it's how it's being used. You know, right. This pen can be a weapon if I use it to try and ram it into the chairman's eye, which I won't.
Stop over here so I can see you. Who is that in there?
Turn around, man. You know, get a better view.
Don't just sit over here.
I'm not saying anything late.
I'm going to switch chairs to Terry.
Still moving. Okay, anything else?
The last is the policy acknowledgement referencing new digital policy software. We've made some minor editing, which we're able to do under the policy, but particularly gender-specific pronouns, we're trying to avoid those in all of our policies. Is there anything that I overlooked or need to cover again? I'm happy to do that.
All right, discussion, anyone?
I got distracted a few times, so I apologize.
All right, is there a second? Discussion second. Here on the motion to second. Approve these summary changes. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It passes. All right, thank you.
Aye.
See you tomorrow. Okay. All right, let's move on then to
we know where you are.
We're only 15
minutes. We're only 15 minutes. Put it under there. Thank you.
Why does nobody want to send it?
Sorry for the one.
Okay. This is Matthew Fleming, the purchasing director.
Hey, dude. Thanks for having me this evening. I'll try to be brief. Our budget's pretty small, but feel free to ask anything you would like.
All right.
Our budget starts on page 269.
Okay.
The purchasing division, we're in administrative support. We support all the other divisions and help them procure their goods and services and provide support for them. We are a department of three FTE positions. On page 271 is our chart of accounts, or I'm sorry, our play chart. We report directly to the director of finance, and I have the director, which is myself, and then we have a specialist under the buyer. On page 273 outlines our budget. It's very similar to last year. The only changes that we had a little bit of increase.
Why don't you give attention to the speaker here?
Yeah. Sure, that's okay.
Gotta get
to
the right page.
It's at 269.
I got it.
Yep.
All right, so your levy increase is going from 246 to 259.
Correct, yeah. And I think we're about 96% or 97% salary. We don't have a whole lot of other expense other than salary. I mean, we buy a lot of stuff, just not for our department.
279?
17.
Oh, 17. Okay.
But 273 is the breakdown on page 273. The only increase was a mild one of about $500 for some additional support for the NIGP codes. They're working with our software. That codes vendors allows us to use the MCC codes to actually help do some automation within the ERP software, and it pays for the National Institute of Government purchasing this intellectual property so we can use their code.
Discussion?
Second.
Further discussion? Anyone? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you. Good evening.
All right, finance?
You're not going to come down here and sit down?
No.
Page 261. Actually, I would direct you to page 251. I will be presenting administrative services and finance budget. Barna will present non-departmental and debt service.
All right.
So the administrative services budget is actually fairly simple. We refer to this as the floor account. The line item for other professional services, however, actually doesn't pertain to our floor. This is the security guards over at the courthouse. So you can see that there is an increase in that fee for this year, but that is a set fee. Looking over the rest of the items, furniture and fixtures, there was $5,000 that was used for a door scanner at the entrance so that employees can get in while the door is locked. The door is now locked at all times. And we're proposing some additional acquisitions for $5,000 for this year as well, for 2020. Otherwise, there's very little increase to this budget. I don't know if you want to do this individually or if you want to.
We can do that. Is that $5,000 for chairs in the county board?
No, it's not for chairs. That would be in the county board budget.
I just thought maybe we could slide it from here.
Bring your own cushion.
Not the door to the building, but on the second floor, so this is the floor account, so second floor, there were some concerns about security, so all doors are now locked. These doors are keyed. They've always been keyed, but we now keep them locked at all times. And the employee entrance, the main entrance into the floor next to the windows there by the elevator, that door is kept locked at all times as well, but it didn't used to be. So now when people come from other buildings, someone has to let them in, so we put a door card reader on that door so they can get themselves in.
All right, discussion on this?
Patty, I have.
Yes.
Yeah. Regarding the security at the courthouse, it's my understanding last week, I believe, that none showed up. Deputies were called in to work security. Oh. Judge Wagner was also helping out with that until deputies could arrive. Is this a problem with this service?
That was a problem. The security company that we contract with to do that security had both of their employees. One just simply did not show up for work, which unfortunately happens on occasion, and the other one had a medical emergency. And by the time they notified the company, they were sending the replacement down from Milwaukee that got stuck in rush hour traffic, so was delayed in getting here. Deputies are our backup for security, and the timing of everything, we got two deputies over there as quickly as possible until the security staff got in.
So this isn't something that happens routinely?
No.
Okay.
No, it should not be.
All right, further discussion. All right, does someone want to move this approval?
I will. Right,
second.
Further discussion. All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
And I would direct your attention to page 64, which is the finance budget. The detail begins on page 265. There are not many changes to this budget. The salary increases, as you are aware, is predominant over the county. There's a decrease in other professional services. That is the result of a carryover from 18 to 19, which allowed us to reduce next year's budget. There's a little bit of decrease in office supplies, increase in subscriptions, all less than $500. If I might, I would like to also then go on to the public works finance portion and then human services. Finance all flows to finance. So any fiscal people placed in other locations flow through to us. And so they're shown in these sections, but if you notice in public works, with the exception of a small amount, you see inter-department personnel charges. So they're reported in a finance budget because they report to finance, but then they're charged back to their department in which they work. So it's a similar arrangement to the way that we've structured HR now. This was the original model. So there's a slight decrease in the public works segment. And then the next one is human services. And you can see that there's zero projected and zero proposed capital because all of those fiscal wages get charged back to that.
Any further? Is there a discussion? Motion?
Motion approved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Passes.
Okay, I have the non-departmental budget starting on page 353. It's called non-departmental because these are majority revenues that are received that are county wide type revenues, not attributable to one department. So materially, if you take a look at the sales tax line item, it's showing an increase from last year's adopted budget of 14,650, and we're proposing 16,050,000. That's a $1.4 million increase. What that $1.4 million increase is based on is taking our projection for 2019 and then adding a 4% increase to that, which was what we've been trending the last 3 years, a 4% increase. For the state's shared taxes line item, it shows an increase from 3.2 million to 4 million. That state shared taxes is comprised of utility aids and county municipal aids. And in addition, we also have now personal property tax being collected or being provided to the county from the city, from the state. So that's the increase there. Everything else other than a few minor increases and decreases are pretty much the same from last year's budget.
Right, discussion? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
And the next budget would be the debt service budget. That's found on page 375, is the detail line. It shows an increase in the principal paid of $600,000 and a slight decrease in the interest. The principal and interest amounts come from our debt schedule that we work with Ehlers. That's shown in the budget on page 39. The general interest number there, the $2.9 million, is less than what is shown on the Ehlers schedule because $638,800 of interest is budgeted in the Brookside budget for paying back the $18 million that was purchased for the remodeling of Brookside. And then there's $369,000 that the city provides us from paying back their portion of the safety building build out from 2014. Then on the revenue side, it shows a premium on bonds of $870,000. Now this is a tangible material amount that is shown because of our excellent credit rating and our the way the market came together with selling of our bonds in August, we were able to obtain $870,000 on premium on our bond to offset this year's debt service levy amount.
So that's 1 year only?
There's one, we can do it over 2 years. There's a portion that will be attributable for this year, the 870, and then there's a portion that will reduce the debt service levy for next year as well. But overall, our debt service went up about $600,000.
just so we understand this, 870 is going to offset what?
Offsets the expenses shown above.
So that doesn't include the figure you have up here at the...
So if you net the 17,782,000 in expenses, offset 870,000 in revenue, then our debt service becomes 16,900.
So it comes down to 17.
Discussion? That's it?
Yeah.
Discussion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Of course, there's nothing you can do about their figure, anyways.
No. Well, that's based on the schedule.
Yeah. Get
given.
That complete your report?
It does.
All right. So, motion to approve, to adjourn until tomorrow.
So moved.
Second.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
I have copies of the budget resolution draft that I'd like to pass out.
Can we have the Yeggs vote first this
time?
So that all of you understand, this is Thursday's discussion.
Right.
Casual day.
We'll start the meeting tomorrow with health insurance.
Can we have the Yeggs vote first on adjournment? Can we have the Yeggs vote first on adjournment?
All those in favor of adjournment.
If they have somebody from Central or something like that, like, oh my God.
Aye.
It's a long drive home then.
Who that voted yes and I prevail.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
So, I've missed already the last 2 days and I'm missing Tuesday, so I was like, I should be yeah, I'm coming with you guys.
This is the most supervisors that come at me on the
You're always welcome to
get an extra one.
Yeah.
And you can leave your books here if you want.
Huh?
Yeah.
Can I? I'll just. Nobody's going to steal it, right?
No.
I didn't think so.
Well, I'm just going
to
take my
book. I'll try, yeah.
Ben?
You have a headache still?
I don't know what to do.
I'm glad I don't have to take a test. That's not it. Look, it's too far out because
Right. 5 o'clock somewhere. I probably believe that. There's a deal. If it was a Monday or a Friday, you're going to have problems.
We
think
that we go
good night. Thank you, Laura, for circling back on that project. I appreciate it.
Right. Back in the day, right?
And I said something to
her. I do.
She messaged me back, so we've interacted. It seems like her take is within whatever my district wants.
Well, because she's in hot water.
Right.
You know, so
right.
I get a good crowd.
Yeah. So that's why.
Right. Although I put this in writing, but it was an issue that I could stand.
No.
I won't be here first thing tomorrow. I'll probably be here It's my son's 16th birthday, so I'm taking him.
It's not in my district, but it's an issue.
My son's 16th birthday, so I'm taking him.
Please, I can, but you know what they're thinking.
It's my last one. He's got a car. He's getting his license in like 3 weeks. Yeah, I bought him a Jeep. Jeep Wrangler. Right.